Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Face Us, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, property, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people, must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to face us. You are listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is January 24th, 2024. My name is Robin Austin, and I'm with my co-host, Luann Fleming, tonight.
Hello, everybody. Marcy Freeman has the night off, and so does Hillary Hoge. She's not feeling well tonight, so keep both of them in your prayers. They have been lovely, lovely, wonderful co-hosts with us, and we enjoy every minute with them. And let's just talk about how great it's been having them as a co-host, because we've been going on for over 5 years with Marcy alone, and Hillary as well. I think she's been on at least 4 years.
You know, the beautiful thing for us, or for me in particular, I suppose, is when we met them, each of them, they were just like we were when we first were introduced to court corruption. They were nervous and frightened and at a loss about what to do. Mm-hmm. They were being abused in the court system, and they didn't know who to turn to.
Yeah.
And they had tried to deal with it in the ways that people do. They'd gone all through all the normal channels. They'd talked to legislators. They'd talked to, you know, the attorney generals. They'd talked to various people and found no one to help.
Right.
And then they found us, and they started talking with us about what was going on in their lives. And as we talked to them over the weeks, I mean, they called into our radio show first,
mm-hmm.
and we talked to them. And sometimes they were like, I don't know if I should talk about this. I'm afraid to talk. And we said, I know, it's serious to discuss these things. And it is something that you have to think through and you have to be careful about. But it is important that people know what's going on. And so as we developed a relationship with them, each of them, in their own right, have become some of the strongest advocates that I know
mm-hmm.
in resisting the corruption in our courts. They have grown into these people that are really formidable when you go up against them. And they are amazing advocates who are helping thousands of people now, each of them,
mm-hmm.
in their own ways and
right.
in various ways. And I admire these ladies so much. I admire them so much for who they are and how they are devoting so much of their lives to something. There's no monetary reward to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it costs us mostly certainly for the radio show, we pay for that, but it's not just, that's not the only cost. These are individuals who travel a long distance to appear in a court case just to support someone who's in a court case, who's being under attack by the court system.
Right.
And
there's
no rewards in the external world for it. But I think each of us feel that it is a reward to do what is right, to stand up for what is good and just and true. And that's what has motivated these people to keep standing up and to keep showing up and to keep striving for excellence
right. and,
as advocates. And I admire them greatly.
You know, and Rob and I, we've been putting this book together for many years, and we've got the name of the book, and it's coming out here within the next a couple months. We just got done doing Marcy Friedman's story, and it is amazing. I mean, that's such a good story. I can't wait to break that out one day. We're going to do a radio show on it as well, with the Abbott coming on here and talking about that book. And we also have Marty Oakley's statements in there, along with Cause, with the TS Radio.
Cause Wittenscape.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cause Wittenscape. She's going into the book as well, what she sees going on. And we'll also have some other radio show hosts coming on in our book. So the stories that they have to tell alone is going to be really well. And it's been a long process, a long, hard time and you know, it's hard to write about this kind of work, but it's rewarding as well. It's rewarding.
You know, for you and I and anyone who gets involved in this, one of the most difficult things is that if you want to stand up for what is right, then you have to listen to what is wrong. And that means that we find ourselves listening to the most horrible stories.
Yeah.
You know, the most terrible stories of the inhumanity of human beings one to another, and how people abuse each other and harm each other in terrible ways so that they can profit, and so that they can profit wildly.
Right.
And that's kind of what we have tonight, is stories that relate to how the court system and the law is used in a way that allows some individuals to profit wildly at the expense of others. And in the case of the courts, it's when you have inside players in the courts. In other words, when the people in the black robes are involved, when the attorneys are part of a cabal that sets out to defraud someone of their property unjustly, you have organized crime organizations that move into place. And there's a certain procedural law that is happening that people don't often talk about, where the procedure in the court is to permit the kind of abuses that we see and to protect those responsible for those abuses. And that is something that I think we're going to talk a lot more about tonight with our guests. Would you like to introduce
our
guest?
Yeah, our guest tonight is, we're going to, first of all, welcome Sylvia Winter. She is from Avondale, Arizona. And she talks about how millions of her loved ones are being abused and murdered, and nobody's really talking about the root cause. And she's going to talk about top-down procedural law from FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the DOJ, and the court system combined. Does it cause tyranny? So we also talk about how the guardianship system is a lucrative and poorly regulated industry that has accumulated more than 1.5 to 3 million people, many at risk of abuse, neglect, theft, and even death at the hands of unscrupulous and neglectful individuals and institutions. Even good people get corrupted by the system and end up doing bad things. Sylvia understands all the obstacles on how the system works. Her mother is currently under guardianship. So please, everybody, join us for this lively discussion tonight. Anything else we want to talk about real quick? Or we're just going to bring on our guest. Let's just do that.
I think we're ready to talk with Sylvia.
Okay, let's go ahead and welcome Sylvia to our show. Let me see if I can get her on here. Hold on a second.
Sylvia Winter, I appreciate your joining us tonight. Thank you for coming on to our show to talk with us.
I'm honored to speak. It's nice to have somebody.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Hold on. Let me get these channels up.
All right. We're adjusting our dials and switches here.
So, Sylvia, so we've got a lot to talk about, and we're going to kind of put it in an order of just tell us briefly how your mother basically got into guardianship, and you don't have to go into the details, just how long ago was it and how long she's been in there, because you understand how the system works. And then we really want to dive deep into the system on the procedural law.
What we spoke of the other night.
Yeah.
And you were explaining things that a lot of people never get the chance to hear about or understand.
Mm-hmm.
And So I'd like to get into some of that, but let's just start, if you would, please, by just introducing us to you a little bit. Tell us about how you got involved with all of this and what led to your initial interest in learning about these things, and then your own personal, a little bit about your own personal journey, if you would, please. Sylvia, go right ahead.
Sylvia?
Are you there? Is your phone on mute?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, tell us about how you first came into the knowledge that there was corruption involved in the guardianship system. Can you hear us? There you are.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you seem to be breaking up.
I'll change.
I think you're going to be, are you breaking up? Yeah.
We're just hearing bits and pieces.
Can you get into a secure location?
Maybe you can change your location, try a different phone, I'm not sure.
All right,
You can also hang up and call back in if you want to, if you think that'll help.
I hear you fine.
Okay, but you're breaking up on our show.
I heard you say, I hear you fine.
Want me to call back?
Try that and we'll try to get you back on.
Because we're barely catching just every fourth or fifth word from you. All right.
Go ahead and call back in. Hang up and call back
in. Hang up and call back in, and we'll try to get you on the show because we're not able to really hear anything much that you're saying.
Yeah. Sometimes we get bad connections, and that just happens.
Right.
Okay. Are you in a secure place? Can you talk? Mm-hmm.
See, right now we hear nothing. Right. We only hear ourselves talking at the moment.
Which isn't bad. We talk a lot about this. So, Sylvia, why don't you go ahead and hang up and call back into the show, and sometimes I'll give you a better connection. We have that once in a while. Go ahead and do that right now.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
Okay, she's going to call back into the show. Sometimes they have bad connections. That's okay. You know.
In the meantime, I would like to just go a little deeper as to some of the things that we learned from Sylvia. Sylvia, in her own journey, has had discussions with people who shared a lot of information that is not normally available to people. And we all know about the big time whistleblowers like Edward Snowden. And when someone blows the whistle on what's really going on, such as Edward Snowden, it's funny because this is a person who revealed that our own government was perpetrating crimes against its own people.
Mm-hmm.
And because he revealed to the people that our government was perpetrating crimes against them, he's now he's charged with crimes. Now he's a criminal. You know, now he's the one that we're supposed to ostracize and not listen to because of the fact that he's speaking truth. And so speaking truth to power is something that, especially in today's world, is very dangerous. For instance, we all know what has happened in the medical arena over the last 3 or 4 years. Doctors who spoke truth were ostracized by their peers and by the American Medical Association, who actually pulled their licenses if they spoke enough truth to their patients to tell them what was effective against the disease that we all know the world was fighting.
Okay, let's see if we can get Sylvia back on here. Sylvia?
Well, back in. Oh. Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, okay, much better.
I can hear you.
Thank you, Eva.
Welcome
all
back.
Right, good. Super. Yeah. Well, okay, to answer your question, you know, I'm just an average American person, and I kind of had my antenna up about being suspicious of the law because I got into a different system of law prior to that called employment law ravages. That's another story for a different time, but I got involved in elder law because my mom got this diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and her son came to us one day on Friday the 13th in March 2015, and he comes into the house in the backyard, and he says, "Well, Mom, we're here today to let you know that this is kind of how it's going to go with you." And she says, "What, Bogie?" So my mom you know, a cute little German girl, lived in Litchfield Park, Arizona. And he said, well, Mom, this is kind of how it's going to go. Clark and I are going to, we're going to put you in an apartment kind of arrangement so that you'll never have to cook or clean again. And we'll come and visit you, and everybody will cook for you, clean for you. And Sylvia can come and visit you if she wants to. You know, and I thought, well, gosh, who died and made you God? You know, I mean, and I said, well, Borg, you know, and my mom said, well, Borgie, I don't want to leave my house. You know, he said, well, this is how it's going to go down, Mom. It was just letting you know. And she says, well, we'll see about that. And she said, no, you can leave. And so we took them out. We let them out to the front, and they left. And my mom said, oh, my God, Sylvia, don't let my sons get the guardianship over me. You know, and that's how it started. So she told me to go fight this in court. And I thought, there's no chance in hell that they'll get guardianship over her because they have history of being in trouble in law. You know, they have substance abuse in their history and in their present time and things of that nature. And I thought they wouldn't stand a chance. How in the world would they get custody or guardianship over my mom? There's no way. So I thought I'd be a shoo-in because I don't have anything in my history or in my present or in my regular person like so many others. And so we went there, and it was an open shut shit show from the beginning. My mother had her rights taken away. And she said to the court, you know, I don't need a guardian right now, but in the future I'd like to have my daughter because she's already living with us, and we get along well. Sylvia doesn't have anyone. And she said, my sons have their wives and their lives and their businesses, and Sylvia doesn't have anyone. And we, you know, my mom reiterated that we love each other deeply. And that our spare time is shared in the same interests. We love the same things on television and music, and so we're like two peas in a pod. And really, by law, if the judges would be upholding law, it's their responsibility to honor my mother's request. Instead, what happened to her was they made a ward out of her illegally, because wards are for people, that categorization is only for people that don't have family. So they started breaking law in the court from the very beginning. And they took my rights, my mom, they took my mother's rights away to speak on her own behalf. And there was also all this kind of proof of false documentation being presented to the judge as if it were factual. And by the end of that hearing, my brother walked in with documents that stated that her doctor said that she was incapacitated, which she wasn't, because the reports that that my brother had in his hand to present to the judge, those documents were referencing the appointment that I had with the doctor. And when we were in the doctor talking about my mom's Alzheimer's, the doctor said to me verbally, your mother doesn't need a guardian now. She's not in the least incapacitated. She's maybe 2% affected. But get ready, because in the future she'll be needing more and more attention. Eventually she'll need a guardian, but not now. So then I was shocked because the documents, somebody wrote those documents. The doctor didn't write those documents. Somebody, I believe probably the legal department where the doctor works, had to write those documents, because that's not what the doctor said to me about my mother's prognosis or condition. So that was my first witnessing of crooked documents. And then I find out that is par for the course. It's very normal that more and more things are written about people that aren't even so. And the judges know this too. They get trained over this stuff. They know that they're, I don't hold it against judges for what they do, because I had it explained to me that the judges are on the hook being coerced to break law. This is a national policy problem. So the judges go to work every day and they're like, well, what are we going to uphold law today, or are we going to break law? But nobody makes any waves there because they get a high-powered salary, and they have their own livelihoods and their houses to take care of and their families. So in essence, what's happening is the authorities are screwing us for their own protections, for their own gains. And that's not right. And they really, all day long, judges have a responsibility to God, too, according to the Bible. They're supposed to be carrying out law according to God's will, not according to their employer. So the judges are on the hook because they have to obey the administration of the court. And then the admin gets its rules from the legal department. And then the legal department gets its rules to corrupt through the federal top-down procedural law. And this isn't just affecting our courts. It's affecting all of the other two branches of government. So top-down procedural law affects the judiciary, the executive branch, including the FBI, the CIA, and the president, as well as all of the agencies. Those are all part of the executive branch of government. So all the agencies as well are being mishandled through their own legal departments. The legal departments set these rules of procedure for everybody lower in the chain that's employed. They all have to follow these rules or they won't be working there. And furthermore, then if people have licenses that they've achieved to get to their positions, law licenses, medical licenses, in the medical field as well, they lose their licenses if they go against, if they're subordinate to the rules that they are to follow. So I mean, did
no,
I say
no,
about
we're
that?
That's quite a bit.
We're letting you just speak on because, it's really interesting what we've heard. So, no, just go ahead. And first of all, let me say something, though. So your mom is now under guardianship right now. And have you been able to visit her, talk to her?
Well, for very much the time, I wasn't. They wouldn't allow me to. And but earlier on, before she was this far abused, earlier on I was taking her, and I was keeping her out of there every day because I told her, I don't know how this happened. My mom didn't want to be in a facility. She always told me, I never want to go to a group home, Sylvia. I want to stay in my house. So earlier on, I used to take her out, and we would go to a retirement community called, it's a city here. It's called Sun City. And at first she was staying in a facility in Youngtown, which is next to Sun City where all the old people live. And so I would take her, and we'd quib. What you're supposed to do with Alzheimer's is, most Americans or most people don't even know that you can lose your own nerve cells by heavy exercise. And so I knew this. I have a background in medicine. So I knew the best way I could help my mom with her health was to take her swimming. So we were swimming laps. We were. And then in between that, we'd be singing. And eventually with the declination and the drugging that they were doing, and I was aware of it, and my hands were tied. I couldn't take my mom to a doctor because you have to have the guardianship even to take her to the doctor. So it was a world of predicament. And,
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to know.
Sorry?
So there is a guardianship, and it was determined that you are not the guardian, I gather.
Yeah, and how that happened is in itself an atrocity. I have no strikes on me. Anywhere.
Right.
And I was always a do-gooder, and the government had no idea that, I was the biggest snitch. I mean, let them come for me. I don't give a damn, motherfucker. Oops, never mind. I shouldn't say those things. Pardon me. I'm sorry. That's rude, and I don't like the F word either.
I
don't.
Checking your,
but I've had...
but I do understand your sentiment. It's easy to be so upset that it comes very naturally to want to curse about these things.
Oh,
because
I did a lot of cursing when my mama was in the
abusive way that the legal system can be used in these cases, it's enough to make anybody cuss. I don't like
it. Get involved. They cause so much disruption in your family. They cause your family to literally hate each other. They cause you to say things you thought you would never say. You know, when I remember when my mom was involved in a guardianship, I just wanted this revenge against my brothers and sisters. I never used to think like that. You know, I just wanted them to know that I wasn't that bad daughter. I wanted the court to know that I wasn't that bad daughter that I was made out to be by them. Mm-hmm. I didn't do any of that to ever hurt my mother. They knew that. They knew I was a gem with my mother. We, like you said earlier, two peas in a pod. I actually got tears in my eyes when you said that.
Because
my mom and I were two peas in a pod. And every time I say that, I get tears in my eyes because that is so true. But the way the court used the family is horrifying to me.
Well, they literally, there's something called legal syndrome.
Legal abuse syndrome.
Because they set out to be as devastating as possible to individuals to incapacitate them through PTSD, to create a system where their adrenals are taxed so much and they've been attacked so long and so hard. They want you to give up. They want you to actually die. They hope that you'll kill yourself. Makes it a lot easier on them. But they're pretty content if
evil.
They disrupt you so much that you're unable to function, because that serves their ends pretty well. But this is part of a strategy that that allows them to gain access to and control over people's resources. Are there resources in your family that are being controlled by the court now? Beyond
what happened was my mother was not wealthy. Her and husband who was sick too. He set their house up for a reverse mortgage, and the house was already taken in an auction before anybody had a guardianship over my mom. My mother was categorized as indigent, but my brother and their wives sold everything in the house and kept whatever they had in there, you know, thousands of dollars of top-notch whatever, the furnishings and possessions, and they just sort of took over. You know, they did a hostile takeover of what my mother wanted. They totally disregarded what my mother wanted, and they were getting money from the VA, some $1,400-plus a month, if their loved one goes into a care facility. It's all written policy. So my mother was best bound and determined to go into this care facility, whether she wanted it or not, because my brothers were going to get $1,400-plus a month. And then they denied that they're getting it, but I did research, and I learned that this is how elder law works. It's all policy-driven. There's more bad policies than that. I mean,
right, and that's what you want to talk about, the lot of the policy that they have.
Remember that the judges don't make the rules. The judges don't make these rules, but they go to their job every day, and they have to follow the admin, what the admin and their supervisors tell them to do. Or if they question and say, you know what, I'm going to hold God's law. I'm going to uphold God's law in my courtroom. I don't care, come what may. Well, they're going to be on their little fannies. They're not going to be working there, and they're going to have, they'll probably lose their licenses to practice law. I think everybody knows that. But instead, we're hearing narratives that the judges have immunity. And I guess they do have immunity. That's another policy. And in other words, supposedly judges are allowed to do what they want, but I don't believe that so, and lawyers have told me that really isn't true. That's what the people are told. We're supposed to believe that judges are acting on their own. And that way, if the forces of be are strong enough and the people are enraged about it enough and outraged, then you can focus on the judge and maybe with a miracle, maybe you can remove a judge. But the problem with removing a judge is that he's replaced with another judge. So you can't impact the policy crisis that we have unless you turn this scenario around And you realize this isn't a problem of crooked judges. This is a problem of crooked rules. And how do you control judges? You give them rules to follow in order to keep their job. You see what I'm saying? So if
yes,
the best thing we could do for our freedom, for our freedom movement, the best thing we can do is call this problem out for what it is entirely. What it is it's a system of law. And I'll go over the two kinds of law that we have. But it has to, the problem has to be looked at as the problem of law, because then the people, we, all of us, we have 360 plus million people that can now hold whatever group it is that's making these laws. Now we can say, okay, this is a problem of policy, rules of procedure and policy. Who's making those rules and procedure and policy? I'm going to tell you who it is. And the only reason I know is because my good friend in Congress told me so. This is not coming out of my head. All I'm doing is snitching. Ooh, I'm not happy. It's good to snitch. It's good to snitch when it has to happen, you know? And everybody's,
mm-hmm, right.
Goddamn, whoops. We have that one too. Sorry. Oh, pardon me, please. I don't like GD either. That's not nice. Mm-hmm. But the point is, we have so many, many, many good people, and they're all on the hook because they have high-powered jobs that are supporting their life and their livelihood and their loved ones, and they're paying their huge mortgages, et cetera, explaining that these good people that are doing corruption in law and in medicine, they're good people that are being coerced by the policies of their job. And everybody needs to be brave, or they all need to be taught when it's time for them to get their jobs, because they're going to keep, you know, they're going to keep doing what goes against their conscience, but it takes care of themselves. And I'm sure they have consciences about that. I've seen stories where judges were even reported to have killed themselves, you know, suicide. And then you never get the story about what's all the detail behind that. And I'm telling you, from the judges I know about and that I've experienced, and maybe they come in all different sizes and shapes and attitude, et cetera, and maybe they have bad hearts, some of them. But I've met all good judges, and I could see that they're following rules to harm. And that's so they themselves are protected from harm. And that's not right. And even the Bible says, if you do things for your own gain at somebody else's misery or suffering, you too will account in God's court. But that doesn't help us for now, does it?
No.
So, I don't know.
You know,
did I answer the question?
Yeah, hold on a second.
I've been watching this this series on Netflix that was recommended by one of our co-hosts about Rudy Giuliani and his role in taking down the five mafia families that controlled New York City. And the problems that they had with these mafia families were that the people at the very top, the real mafia dons, were all insulated by layers of, you know, there would be the head of the mafia family, and then there would be their lieutenants, and then there would be the soldiers below the lieutenants.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was they could bust the soldiers for various crimes, but they couldn't connect them up the ladder, and so the crime would go,
mm-hmm,
on because the soldiers were expendable and could be replaced. They could do, you know, and they knew if they talked, that would be the end of them and probably their family too. It was hard to get them,
mm-hmm,
talking. They were insulating the people at the top very well, and it was a known quantity that if you got caught, you took the fall, and then later on you'd be compensated. Later on you might be taken care of, or your family might be taken care of while you did prison time, or they wouldn't. But if you did talk, you're in deep trouble. You're just going to wind up dead, and so is your family.
I think of
what's going on in our court, and I have likened it often to organized crime. As a matter of fact, at the opening to every show, I talk about the relationship between organized crime and our court system. And the thing about that is that it's very much a situation where there is this invisible thing at the very top. As a matter of fact, Colorado is well known. They actually won an award called the Black Hole Award for the obscurity that came out of the Supreme Court, because they made rules that no judge had to reveal anything. No one in the judiciary is held accountable for anything that they do, and there is no oversight for any of it beyond other judges looking at what judges do. So it's as if you had a crime family, several officers, and someone did something in the crime family that brought someone to one of the officers who said, hey, they did something no good. And you said, oh, don't worry. Well, we'll get right on that. And then you take that judge and you put him before the review committee, and it's the other judges that say, well, everything looks good to me, Guido. And there's no accountability. And as you're talking, can't help but see the parallels, because you're talking about top-down procedural and policy law, that is, policies and procedures that guide and govern what these individuals that are in what we think of as positions of power are allowed to do in their jobs, and those procedures and policies keep them in lockstep with someone that we don't even know, that we don't even know who's controlling it. We never even see them, because they're so insulated by the way that the whole system is set up. Would you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I would say so, but not only that, they're kind of forced. The judges are forced to break law. And if they can't stomach it, well, then they need to quit. But I think they don't like it, but they like their jobs more than they could think about doing something else. But I wanted to, before I forget, too, if it's okay, I wanted to point out that I was going to tell them about our two systems of law that we have, like we spoke about yesterday.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, go into that for us.
Can I do that? Okay.
Yes.
Well,
go ahead.
I walked into my friend. Okay, I walked into my legislative friend's that he had, and I said, you know, I had such a hard time in employment law. This was in about 2013, and I said, so why in the world? I read our Constitution, and it says, I don't remember what the number of the amendment was, but it says in there that we will have no discrimination in these United States. And then I said to him, well, so, and I don't want to say his name. I don't know if he could be in trouble. But so I just, my friend, and I said, why is it that we have discrimination here? I mean, I was thrown out of my employment for no good reason, because I filed a complaint. And that's not a reason to lose your career and your life, and I nearly lost my life. But what he said was, well, the reason we have discrimination, Sylvia, is because we have two kinds of law. We have legislative law. He called it statutory. We have statutory law, which Congress makes. And everybody in America knows that. We all know that. We learned that in high school. And then he said, but then we have another kind of law. And he said, it's called top-down procedural law. And the Department of Justice makes that top-down procedural law. And this is the law by which staff, employees, wherever they work, they can be controlled to do good or to do bad. And people, it's amazing how they're willing to do the rules. Whether they're good or bad, most of the people will keep their jobs, although some of the higher-minded maybe more idealistic people, they're not going to go with the flow, and they're going to say, no, I'm not going to do it. And they'll quit, or they'll take an early retirement. And they will, you know, they have a compass that says, I'm going to do things more in the straight and narrow way. And there are those people that willingly, happily will quit their jobs and they'll find their way elsewhere. But so I didn't even know. And I don't think most Americans know that the DOJ has its hand in making law for us. Nobody's talking about that in the news. You know, they're not. And in fact, I'll tell you, in every circle, all of the politicians, even Jim Jordan and his committee on whatever committees they're talking about, whatever issues, they're always defending the system of law that we have. And this is the second system of law that I talked about, the top-down procedural law. They're never calling out that the issues are coming as a process of top-down procedural law. You're all supposed to think that these bad players, all these evil people, they're breaking the law on their own, and they're not. They are coerced to do bad things in order to keep employees there. And so what's happening is you can call that a part of employment law, because the judges, the police, people at the hospitals, they all have to do what the administration tells them to do if they want to keep their employment. So the worst thing about that, though, is...
Let me ask you about this, if you don't mind.
Okay.
We all know that, especially now, but we all know that doctors have the American Medical Association that is responsible for licensing doctors and that they have to answer to the American Medical Association, which is how the pharmaceutical companies gain such a death grip on doctors that they weren't allowed to treat patients in the way that they knew was best. I mean, let's just be completely open and frank. I watched as ivermectin saved Luann's life when she got COVID and had a long COVID that was getting worse and worse and worse day by day. And she went to the hospital, I think it was 7 times, and they would give her no treatment. They kept sending her home, and it might be best that they didn't give her treatment because the treatments that they were giving people were killing them. But in any case, they sent her home over and over and over, and through channels other than those ordinary channels, we were able to get some ivermectin sent in from a doctor that she got an appointment with online, out of state, from an out-of-state apothecary, from an out-of-state...
Oklahoma.
And so she was able to get ivermectin. She was able to begin
Dr.
taking
Jim
that.
Meehan, everybody. Dr.
Jim Meehan made that prescription for her.
H-A-N, he saved five.
And I watched as she recovered in a couple of days from something that looked
how
like it
you,
was about to kill her before
it,
that.
It saved my life, everybody. So
and,
don't believe
and,
that.
So, what made you know? Excuse me, I'm sorry, but before I forget... What prompted you to think to go out of state? To
I
find
had
a
friend of
this.
Mine
what
that was
that?
One of the original FACES advocates came to me and he says, Luann, we're going to lose you if something doesn't happen. And he goes, I know this doctor in Oklahoma. And he gave me his number and I called him up. I got an appointment with the Dr. Jim Meehan. He talked to me and I said, and he's friends with Dr. McCullough, and I said, you know, I feel like I'm just going to die. And he goes, nope, no, you're not. I saved 4,500 people so far, and you're going to be 4,501 or something like that. And so he said to me,
wow.
But, yeah.
He didn't lose any COVID
lose
patients.
Any COVID
and he treated 4,500 plus.
I'd like to tell you something else, too. I mean, I'm glad you're with us. Oh, my God, he saved you. And then you had the gift. That doctor had the gift. And the caring. I mean, you what to say to comfort you as well, which is part of the stress. So that's a really good man. Thank God for him.
Yeah.
And
what
I wanted to say was, it may have well been, if you would have stayed in the same state, they probably would have been all playing ball the same rules. And because you went out of that arena, maybe the other state didn't have to follow these rules because it wasn't a state-driven policy thing. I don't know, but maybe
right,
it didn't
right.
that
and
well,
also,
but
they didn't have any pharmacies. They weren't in the same pharmacies as the pharmacies they have around. They had their own pharmacy that was producing this ivermectin for people. So they had to go through a special RX medicine place to send me the medicine. They sent it to me after Christmas, though, and I ended up in the hospital again. But as soon as I got that medicine that came to me, I had to pay full price for it, but it's worth it. I took one ivermectin, and I passed out for 7 straight hours, and I woke up, and I thought, I'm going to live. I really felt for the first time in my life I wasn't going to die. So all that BS they talk about how bad ivermectin is, man, I will be the first person to stand up and tell everybody they're freaking wrong in the United States of America and across the world about it.
So my point being that we know doctors are under the thumb of the American Medical Association. As a matter of fact, I have a doctor who is a personal friend who is retired now. But when I spoke with him off the record and told him, you know, ivermectin saved Luann's life, and the second time that we were confronted with COVID, I took it myself, and it was like having a cold for a week. It was very mild and didn't last long. But I told him to use ivermectin, and he said, you know, that's a word that I'm not allowed to say, but it is what I took myself when I was when I had COVID, and I'm glad that you had that you found a source of it. That word to you, I could lose my medical license. So when you talk about top-down procedural law, this is an example of how that did apply and does apply in the medical field. And I want people to understand this, because what it means is, even if you have a doctor who is a trustworthy individual who is driving and wants to help you save and protect your life, it may be that there are policies and procedures in the laws that that doctor must follow that forbid them from treating you with what is effective and therefore put them in the position of colluding with those who would end your life instead of saving your life.
Sylvia, that's another reason why when you go to the police department and you'll say, these people are harming my mom, and they'll say, I'm sorry, we can't get involved because it's civil. They have to do that or they lose their job. And my son told me that when he was with the police department and he was talking to me and he goes, Mom, if a lot of my commanders and people, if they go off the chart whatsoever and do anything different besides the laws that they're supposed to instruct, they can lose their job. So that's exactly what we're talking about.
Right. So we're verifying
witnessing
this.
Yeah, we're all having examples that we can speak of that attest to the truth of this. And I wanted to say to you, too, you can probably figure out that the American Medical Association and all of the associations, those are like agencies, and those agencies are also beholden to the top-down procedural law that the DOJ rubber stamps over to them. And so everybody's following these crazy, tyrannical rules to harm. And, and there's going to be more of it if it's not stopped.
Let me ask you a question, because you may have the answer.
Yeah.
We're talking about the DOJ being responsible for a lot of its top-down procedural law. But I'm wondering, because my own research has indicates to me that there really is a group of extremely wealthy individuals at the core of the world community that are, you know, I mean, the Davos group in Switzerland and the World Health Organization and the World Economic Forum that have these plans that they want to institute throughout all of the nations. These people are working very hard to establish controls over the entire population so that humanity becomes one giant resource which they control, like oil or water or food. But I'm wondering if you're aware of a level of control that goes beyond the DOJ.
Well, I know that I know that in Canada and in Germany, firsthand, I know that Germany and Canada have the very same Department of Justice. They call it something else, but they have that same control by the Department of Justice we have. They call it the Department, the Justice Ministerium, for example. That might be one of the names. But it does, in essence, the same thing that our national lawyers do. Our DOJ makes all of the national policy for the USA. And then the reason the DOJ is corrupted, and Jesselyn Radack, a former DOJ whistleblower, was the one that reported this. The reason the DOJ is corrupted is because it's taking its instruction from the FISA court, and that stands for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, which grew out of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. So you can see the word as written as FIC, the acronym FISA. Instead of saying FISA, it would say FIC.
Foreign Intelligence Surveillance
Court. Court, mm-hmm. Because that's really the ultimate authority that is telling the DOJ whether the DOJ wants it or not. They've got to rubber stamp these policies and policies that are hurting our country. And if you look it up on Google, you're not going to find that. You're not going to find the harm that comes from top-down procedural law. You'll see, you'll hear about, you can read about it. It'll say how it's going to do good. It doesn't tell you how they implement tyranny this way. And what I wanted to tell you is those WHO and the World Forum, these are agencies that I believe they're all going to be involved with implementing the New World Order. And the Bible tells us
right. We
are not to go along with the New World Order. And we're supposed to run from it and head for the hills. So what I'm saying is I'm saying that probably one of the strongest forces that we have is that the policies to harm that are coming from that body of DOJ lawyers, and they are 130,000 plus national lawyers making policy, national policy for our country. So people think our president has a lot of control on what's happening policy-wise. No way. Presidents aren't making policy. The DOJ makes all national policy. It's a huge power that they're given, and nobody's talking about it, and the DOJ controls our news as well. I'm not the only one who knows this, and in fact, I was at the Cronkite School of the Cronkite Mass Communication School, and my professor there was the one that was the one that relayed that and said the DOJ controls all the news, and I didn't know that. And I believe her because people have no reason to lie. We're all on the side of good, and most of us are Christians. And I just wanted to say again that what better way to control people than to give them rules to follow and pay them? You know, this is a job you applied for. You got the job. Out of 300 people, we chose you. And these people that are new in their jobs are going to do the best to do all the rules. And they'll do the bad ones as well, as long as they're not messed with in their workplace. And everybody knows, hell, if you don't like what you're asked to do in your job, and you say, no, I'm not going along with that. No way am I selling out. Well, then they're branded a whistleblower, and then they, by policy, they will be removed. And they'll take these employment law
removed,
tactics, and they will...
And
go
not
ahead.
Only removed,
it'll be hard
but blackballed,
for them to get a job. Yeah.
You know, blackballed
yeah.
And
I went,
out. You now are an outcast, and you'll never work in that field again. We're pulling your license
yeah.
that you've gone to college for God knows 16 years to get, maybe if you're in a specialized
yeah.
field
yeah.
of medicine, or you know, 8 years to get if you're a lawyer. I mean, it's those things you will sacrifice. And there's always the possibility that they'll go after you personally. You know, these people are unscrupulous,
yeah.
and you may be in a position where if they feel that you know it's necessary, or they want to, or they feel it's intimidating to those that might want to follow your example, you might wind up dead. I mean, you know, these are These are the realities that anyone that adopts a whistleblower might face.
Yeah, I wasn't always a Christian. I came to Christianity late in my life. And since I have that message and I believe it 100%, you know, I feel very, very comfortable in all kinds of situations. And every time my heart hurts, I keep saying, "Oh, bring it on." I don't fear death anymore, is the point. And
right.
I think everybody needs to be an Edward Snowden and a Julian Assange, because the damn government can't get us all. We all have to be united. And again, the Bible is right, because it says we're all called here to love God and to love one another as we love ourselves. It doesn't say to love your paycheck. It says to do what is right wherever you can. And if everybody were willing. Pardon?
Okay, so hold on a second. We are going to actually open up our phone lines here in a few minutes, about 5 minutes. And there's a couple people here that have their hand raised. Just keep them there, and we will pull you into the studio probably in about 5 minutes or so. And the number to call into our show is 845-241-9962. You press A1, 845-241-9962. You press A1, and that's the same for every show. Sometimes it'll say you have to push A1 before that, and sometimes it'll say they're going to charge you a penny for a call.
A penny a minute. Yeah, and that amounts to 60 cents for an hour, so it's not too restrictive, but, you know, it's...
And that just happens to be with some phone lines that happens, too. Sorry about that. But
when I'm out of town,
we have no control. I know, we have no control over that.
No, nor does it go to us.
And remember, everything you say is recorded and archived on our radio show. So, and you can go to the Hidden Truth Reveal Blog Talk Radio and see that there's like 300 and something like that on there now that you can share with your friends. You can listen to them anytime you want. There's
it's
all
a fascinating
kinds of
archive
it's a,
because
it's
we've
fascinating.
Explored a lot of topics, and all of those topics were generally with people who were expert in various fields.
Which we're going to be bringing more on our show.
And so there's... It's a rich jewel mine to go and find some real treasure about what's going on in the world today.
So if you could talk a little bit more about, I know we're talking about the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Someone here is wanting to know a little bit about that. Sylvia?
Okay. Well, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. You want me to speak about what I know of that?
Yeah,
topic?
Go ahead.
If you would, please.
Okay. Well, supposedly, Congress was the one that enacted that and gave power to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court through that act. I don't know if that's true or if it's a lie, but I know that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court looms and controls the DOJ as to what policy to implement into the United States from the top down. And the FISA court itself is so secretive. Like, I looked it up and I saw that it was at one point it was located at 3333 North Constitution Avenue in Washington, D.C. Okay, I watched a video about it, and the person who made the video said that that this court is so secretive. This is the building where it's found, that address I gave you, okay, that address on Constitution Avenue. And you go into that building and you go to the desk where normally they would help you, and they would say that they themselves don't know where to direct you into what suite or what office where that Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court's office is. They couldn't even direct you there. But then it doesn't matter, because the group is so, it only stays in a location for a given amount of time, a short amount of time, and then it secretly moves elsewhere into another building. So secrecy is very important to them. And then divert back to, I was in the middle of saying something. I guess it sounded like I was done, but what I wanted to say about
the idea that we should be loving one another, because the Bible is right about it. It says if we really love one another over and above our paychecks, for example, if that were possible, then we would all be standing as a united force. And then we'd really be a force to reckon with against government. If we were solid like that, we need to stop listening to the messages on the news that say, stop trusting people if you don't know them. You know, that's a horrible advice, and that keeps us all isolated, which the government wants us. They don't want us empowered. And look at even, this is a further diversion, but John Lennon, I mean, the government could have easily killed him because he was teaching messages, these messages from government and other sources that say to be divided. He was saying to love one another. And really, if people held to that, and you keep throwing by the wayside these messages to do the opposite of that, we're much stronger because we all love one another, and we're not, you know, but the way America is set up, we need our paychecks. So what I'm saying is it would be cool if we could set up training or seminars that people under these terrible pressures to harm people in medicine or in law, you know, these people need to be taught when is the time to quit your job. If they can't figure that out on their own, you know, then it's like when you go out to a bar and people want to dance, but they don't want to be the first one, right? And you hear music and people all want to dance. They always are waiting because they don't want to be the first ones. So there have to be people. It would be helpful if there were seminars and we could all talk to people about when your employer or your supervisor tells you to do things that you're not comfortable with in your conscience, well, then it's time to find another place to work. And, and those kinds of things. And we have to have more that we can do to counteract tyranny anyway, though, too. And what I'm saying is if people change their mindset, stop looking at these criminal judges as criminals and understand that they are hooked into their jobs. It would be great if they weren't, but they seem to be. So then look at the whole process as a problem of law policy. And then look at the larger picture and you say, who the hell is making that law? And then we can form masses of people to peacefully protest there. We go to the DOJ and say, no more. We don't want it. Get the hell out of here. And then the DOJ will finally shut up because we outnumber them. And all they could do is call out the Capitol Police and say, oh, the American people have run amok. They're all a bunch of crooks. They're all rioting against the good lawmakers. And these are not good lawmakers. So therefore, we have a right to take our union back.
We absolutely do.
And
you know, that's very
do.
True. And the Constitution is written in such a way that it's incorporated right in that document. And that is why we have the right to bear arms, no matter what anyone tries to tell you. The reason why the framers of the Constitution felt it necessary to give us the right to bear arms was in case tyranny became incorporated into our government and we needed to rise up in arms to overthrow them.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds like I'm saying something radical. That sounds like I'm saying something extreme. It's neither radical nor extreme. It's American. It's truly the most American thing that I could tell you, that we're supposed to be responsible for overthrowing whatever government takes the reins of power out of people's hands and begins to abuse the people.
Right.
It is our responsibility.
Let's bring in a caller. We have a 770 number. Let's see who this is. 770 number.
Hi, welcome to the show.
You have your hand up. You have a question, comment?
Let's see. I don't have my hand.
You're on the air.
This is Becky Harbor. Hello?
Hi, Becky.
Hi, Becky. Welcome to the show.
I haven't heard from you for a while. How are you doing?
Oh, I do the best I can. I'm in on the corrupt, part of the estate. Once they, you know, they kill the ward, I hate to use that name, but, then the real dirt comes out in the estate. So I'm dealing with that. But anyway, thank you for asking. I just want to say a couple of things. This past couple of months, there's been some real positive news I was really shocked of a case that I know of out of Nevada when a a person that's just my friend that knows about my husband called me and said, I want you to see this. And what it is, it was made, her case down in Nevada made smart news. And I can tell you that smart news, I don't know if you know anything about it, but it gives a lot of coverage over cell phones of thousands of people. And I just think that's really positive. And also U.S. News picked up a story about a Delta pilot. He was down in Florida at a gas station, had a heart attack. Same scenario. They took him to a hospital, put him under a guardianship, and that made U.S. Mm-hmm. news. And so my point is that I think we are making strides in, because our goal is to, or my goal is to warn anyone. I talked just this past week to two wives that their husbands have been taken, just like mine, because that's where my passion is. It's not that it's not for everybody, because I think it's just as serious if they take your mother or father. I know it would be in my case. But my passion lies within the constitutional situation of taking somebody's husband for 30 years and just taking them, and you just mm-hmm. say you can't ever see them again. But with that being said, Nebraska, right. I've already talked to her. Yeah, boy, that's a sad case. I know that, Luann. Oh, that's a terrible case. I just talked to her this week. Anyway, but the point is that I think that we really need to focus on getting that word out and warning individuals, because there's just little things that, because we've been through it, we know what to look for. We know what to tell them, how we would have done it differently. What we could have done now that it's all over with to maybe change the course of the game. So anyway, I just wanted to say that I think that's really positive. The second thing I wanted to say is I know what you guys are saying about the laws, but at the end of the day, we do have legislators, and they're in session right now. And I want to just give you an example of how you can miss something if you're not really looking for it. There's a bill down in Florida. I had the paper in front of me. I've misplaced it. I think it's SB 554, but anyway, I'll get it while I'm talking to you. Anyway, it's very deceiving, but it's now where they're going to bring bankers. So before we had hospital case managers, we have the lawyers, we have the personal injury attorneys bringing these cases to the court. What this is saying is it says under the protection of unspecified adults. Well, what they're talking about is elderly. And what they're doing is this bill will allow, if like I'm 67, so if I walked into a bank and maybe I was having a little bit of confusion, they could put a lock down on my account. The banker will now have the right to apply for a guardianship. So in other words, this bill is truly existing in Florida right now. His Senator Roussan has got it out there, and they can lock down your money and for 45 days until they can take it to the court. Now, we all know what happens when they take it to the court, right? We know.
Yeah.
So now we've got the bankers in on the game. So they're already been on the game, but now they're going to do it legally. They're going to have the right to lock down your money if that bill passes. So what I'm trying to say to each and every person that's living here is, listening in here, is to please look at your laws that are being passed through that legislature right now. And then I'm through with all that. I just want to ask directly to Sylvia a question. Sylvia, have you challenged the fact that your brother has a criminal record and he's the guardian of your mother?
Yes. Yes. Everything I bring to the court has been ignored from the beginning. I'm the big villain, okay. And they're all breaking law. It's gross.
Okay, what is your guardianship laws say? Because I know mine says that you cannot have a criminal record.
Here, the whole problem is the judges are disregarding the statutes. Statutory law has no effect. Remember, the courts are being driven by top-down procedural law, which is stronger even than our Constitution. Shame on them. Shame on them.
Okay, I'll look that up because I don't really know a lot about that. So, I don't know a lot about that, but I'll look it up. Now, let me ask you this. Have you taken it to the...
Hold on a second.
Have you taken it to the Court of Appeals?
Here's what happens on that. I tried to get the case into the Court of Appeals. The lower court will not let it. Will not let it out of the lower court.
What do you mean they won't let it? They don't have an option. Where are you at? What state?
I'm in Arizona.
Arizona.
The Court of Surprise, Arizona.
Okay.
Sierra Buena Court.
Well, they're
doing what they want.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't have any.
I don't have any
experience with that because I just know if I were to take something to the Court of Appeals in Georgia, then it would go to the Court of Appeals. So I don't understand what's going on there. But anyway, at the end of the day, thank you for letting me speak. I do think that we're making strides as far as coverage, that's a positive thing. You know, Smart News, U.S. News, and guys, just please keep an eye out for your bills that these legislators are passing. I mean, it's kind of discouraging when I listen to this and you say, well, the bills don't matter, but, I mean, please don't make them legal. Fight them.
Right.
Oh, those ones, yeah. And I want you to know, Becky, what we were talking about earlier, and I have a book by Robert Kennedy called The Pursuit of Justice. And in that book, it states in that book that the Department of Justice really has free reign of jurisdiction over all three branches of government. So that means the DOJ forces the legislature to obey the DOJ, too. So the DOJ corrupts the courts, the legislature, and the executive branch of government. And so the only chance we have outside of the people organizing something, the only other chance we have is that the next president, some of the presidents do. They're hard-nosed and they push back. Trump has already promised that he's going to stop the top-down tyranny. And so has Robert Kennedy Jr. So if each of those is on each of our parties, then America should be fine, at least for the next 8 years, you know, because both of these candidates are promising to stop this top-down procedural tyranny. So that's the good
news. I know that Karen Turk was doing the Trump train, and, you know, Karen wrote a book, and she actually served prison time she shouldn't have. Her mother was taken in a guardianship, and she's real big in on that. So maybe, Sylvia, maybe we'll have some luck with what you're talking about. I love the Kennedys. I'll read that book. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. I do want to say one more thing regarding Robin's comment, and then I'll be through. It was Robin's comment where he said that we're as far as people committing suicide and why they do what they do, I do want to say a positive note on that. The case with Maya Kowalski, I've watched every bit of that from beginning to end, and, you know, that was worth millions of dollars. So that's another positive note that hospital had to pay very dearly for what they did for that mother committing suicide. And that was exactly what you were referring to, Robin, that they drive people to suicide and they're glad that that happens because then they're rid of the problem. Well, that cost them, I mean, just look the case up. I mean,
millions for the state of Florida. It made People magazine. It was all over the news. So, I mean, that's another positive thing. But anyway, thanks, guys. I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. And thank you for bringing that up. You're so right about Maya Kowalski's case.
And thank you.
It's a terrible truth that that is what happened in that case. Maya's mother was driven to suicide by corruption in the medical system, and the family
won a huge lawsuit.
It took about 8 years, I think.
I was so angry watching that movie.
The courts and for them to actually.
That's
win.
Because they put a spotlight on it with Netflix. They had documentaries. They had all. That's what it takes.
Right.
That's
the media
what it
was
takes.
Very. Involved in shedding light on it. And because there was so much said, I think that had a great deal to do with why it was even possible for them to go forward with a court case. And when they did go forward with the court case, her mother had gathered evidence every step of the way and cataloged all of the offenses very carefully, and the evidence was clear to the court, and it was irrefutable, and they won. And
right, yeah.
So never quit. Never give up. Never decide, throw up your hands and say, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. Because with God, all things are possible, and we are more powerful than we ever can know when we stand up for what is right and true and just. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're about.
So, Becky, are you finding more and more husbands and wives being taken apart too as well? Are you finding more cases?
Oh, you're not kidding. I mean, it's at a rampant level. I mean, just this, like I said, in the last couple of weeks too, Nebraska, and that story's tragic, and I'm glad you know about that. And then there's the case in North Carolina, and it's exactly like mine. The playbook is the same. I'm trying everything I can to just tell her what to do when this is all over with, what the lawyers ask me. Well, did you do this? Did you do that? Nope, I sure did not. Well, I can't help you. So what I try to do is teach everyone what I wish that I would have done. What could I have done differently? And I'm telling you, with my knowledge now, there is no doubt in my mind I could have saved my husband.
Can you do me a favor? Well, can you write that whole thing out and send it to me? Maybe we can use that as one of our resources in the book that we're doing.
I'm trying to
put some positive resources in our book that can help people. And we're like, we want to be able to give information to people that will help. If you could do that, I'd love to use it in our book, don't you think?
Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, I sure will, Luann. I sure will. Mm-hmm. Look forward to your book. And thank you guys for everything.
That'd
bye-bye.
That'd be wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We appreciate
thank you, Becky.
You.
Bye-bye, Sylvia. Good luck to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Becky. You and I spoke before on the phone. I don't know if you're aware.
I recognized your voice. I didn't know who you were, but I was like, I know her. Call me again sometime. I'd love to chat with you.
Bye. I love that you're such a Southern Belle. Beautiful Southern Belle you are.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Cute.
All right,
bye.
Becky. Yeah, she's always been so remarkable with what's going on. Every time I have a husband or a wife separated, I contact Becky. I mean, real fast. So, but I can give you her number back if you'd like to get that. 70999.
Yeah, I have it. I have it still.
Okay, good.
All right. Good, good.
Well, no, it's good that people are talking about what's going on and that we can actually communicate this through our radio channel. You know, it's pretty good that we can communicate like this.
Yeah.
But I've talked to Becky before, cases going on in Nebraska. I've got cases going all over where they come in and set the husbands and wives. I mean, I have been in court before where I got guardianship of my husband. I had one of my mother. I have one of my husband. He was only 48 years old, and I hardly ever told the story too much about my husband. But I had guardianship of him. And fortunately for my family, my father was the chief of police in Aurora. Prior to all this, long
father-in-law.
Time. Father-in-law. Yeah. and they gave guardianship to him, and I became the guardian of my husband. So that, in that case, it worked out for my family.
They gave conservatorship
to him.
And you became the guardian, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was years ago. But you know what I think about? What could have happened back then? That's kind of scary that for some reason, you know, I ended up escaping out of that with my husband, and I was a trustee for my daughter. I got that all taken care of, and then I was a guardian for my mother. So I understand how the whole system is supposed to work. And when you have a husband or wife separate of 30, 40 years, I would be furious they took him away from me and I didn't know what was going on.
Oh,
I couldn't even imagine that.
That is legal abuse.
Let alone your mom or your dad.
Yeah, that's horrifying legal abuse.
I'm hoping Becky
in any case where you've got a family member who's close to and loves someone who's taking care of them and working with them and looking after them, and the courts come in and just separate them and isolate that person from them.
Oh, the case
that
in Nebraska, that's
criminal abuse, in my opinion. That is
the case that's going on in Nebraska. I won't mention any names, but all what she wants is her husband back. He's not even that old. I mean, he's not even like 7 or 8.
No.
He's in his early 60s, everybody, and he's been taken away, and they're moved him away 100 miles from her home. She has to go travel him. She has to fly packages underneath the door. They kick it out of the door. She can't even bring him in packages or nothing. It's they have ownership of him.
Yeah.
And it's so sad because she loves her husband so much. I just hate that whole story. You know, we even met him.
Can you guys hear me?
Huh?
Can you
go
hear
ahead.
Me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Luann? Yeah. Well, I wanted to kind of visit what you just said, that you, when you were given guardianship over two or three people, was law working properly for you? There was no shenanigans or corruption in the court?
This was 20 years ago. My husband's been passed on for about 19 years, so about 20 years ago, we ended up in a guardianship. I had no idea what it was. I had no clue, you know, and for some reason, my husband got a settlement from a lawsuit where he hurt himself on the job, and he ended up becoming quite sick after all that and during the whole time. And he ended up hurting his back, and then he had surgery, and we thought he kind of had a mini stroke. We're not sure exactly what happened, but he wasn't able to work the last couple years of his life, and he got really, really sick. And for him to get that settlement money, they had to get a conservator, and they chose his dad because he was the former chief of police in Aurora, Colorado. So when they went ahead and gave him the conservatorship, and they said, well, we need a guardian. I said, what do you mean a guardian? I'm his wife. Isn't that a guardian? And they said, no, you have to be appointed by the court. So then I went to the court that morning, and they swore me in, and I stood up, and I told the judge, well, what is a guardian supposed to do? And they said, well, you're supposed to take care of your husband, you know, take care of the ward. And I said, ward, he's my husband. And they said, well, you're supposed to take care of him. I said, I've been taking care of him for 30 years or something like that, 28 years. And so I said, what's the difference? And everyone got up and just started laughing and cracking up, you know, because I'm like, what's the difference? You know, I want to know what I had to do. So
That's a good question. My short story, I tell it kind of in the book, but...
My husband was so sick. He had so much things going on with him. I was like in 7 or 8 different courts at one time with all the problems that led to. But I ended up getting guardianship of my husband, and I did end up getting guardianship of my mom. So I know how the system is supposed to be,
and
it's tough.
The question really was, did it work out the way it ought to?
It did work out the way it was ought to with my husband. Yes, it did.
And
I can say that.
With your mom?
Not with my mom. And in a way it did, but the way they came after all of our property, our estate, loss of 123 antique cars, 123 antique cars, everybody, we had in our family. We had 12 to 15, nine motorcycles like that. We had so much stuff.
I believe there were five properties. Sizable amount of cash.
There's a lot of cash. And by the time it was all said and done, the family got very little money. They got like $11,000 per 6 kids. I mean, this was at least a $5 million property in today's economy out here in Colorado. And it's really hard to talk about because all I can see is them taking all my, all these cars had to be forced off the property. The cars that we loved in my, in the, on the property my entire life was taken away. And my whole dad's legacy was erased right in front of us. And that kind of really pissed me off to continue
and
the show right here.
Luann,
you know?
And her sisters continued to battle against the injustices in a lot of ways, partly in court, partly with demonstrations outside the courthouse.
We did
partly
everything.
With, you know, all kinds of things.
We did everything.
In masks because they were afraid of retaliation, but they, you know, carried signs that named the courts that were responsible for the injustices. And and eventually a judge did step down and took early retirement, and we believe it was directly related to some of those protests. But eventually, I think she wore them down, and they appointed her and her sister co-guardians of their mother.
Yeah, which I'm so thankful for, because I've heard horrific stories, you know. I don't know. Being with my mom the last few days of her life and for the last 8 years of her life, you know, we weren't able to see her for 3.5 years at all. I was completely forbidden, isolated. I went through the same playbook as everybody else did.
They were bad person in the family maligned and lied about in court.
Well, they couldn't make me bad because I had a shining record and
there was no evidence. They actually had to look at evidence in the courtroom, there was no evidence of any wrongdoing at all they had accused, which was her and her
sister. And when they told me to stay away, I stayed away because I knew they were going to set a trap for me to get in there, and they were going to do something against me, and then I would have it on my record, and they could use it in court against me, but I never gave anybody any ammunition whatsoever. I had everybody else do it, but I didn't do it. That's what you have to do. And you have to really lay kind of low key, but know what's going on. And you really have to know what you're doing. So Becky, if you could get something together about husbands and wives, we'd love to use it. Anybody, you have any information. In fact, we have Debbie Carroll. She was one of our radio show hosts back about 2 or 3 years ago. She is writing a whole 12 pages of the CPS, Foster Care Society, all that whole CPS, Child Protective Services, the parallel system it is with the children and the of the elders. And we're going to put it in our book, and it's going to talk a lot about how they're similar and on how they use the
kids.
They
use similar playbooks and do similar tactics to separate children from families that they do elders from families.
Right. So that's going in the book, and she's got like 12 pages. It's really good.
And, you know, all of that sort of ties back in and circles back around to top-down procedural law.
Yeah,
Sylvia,
you talk about
Winter.
Great about this. I'm serious. You've been such a good...
You know, it makes sense.
Oh, my gosh, we're coming to an end here. We've got 1 minute left.
It makes sense that these individuals following a playbook that is written somewhere in the heart of the DOJ and handed to these legal systems that then must follow this playbook in the way that the courts handle these cases.
That's really opened
our eyes, Sylvia, and I am so grateful and glad that you've been able to share this time with us and share these things with us. Do you have any closing statements or words that you'd like to share with our listeners before we wind this?
I think it would be great if people understand that we have all these evil things coming, but they're not really low level people driven. They're policy driven, and it's through force of a coercion from the very tip top, and then it's infiltrated through all these chains of people until it gets into whatever entity. In this case, we're talking about the court system, and if we want to do something about it, we should try as a people to get this national policy problem. We'll get it spoken about in national ABC, NBC, CBS networks. And it's not happening because we have censorship coming from each of those entities through their legal department. So you could go to ABC News and talk to any of the employees, and they would love to help us. But they're going to take it where censorship is addressed, and they're going to have to take these questions to the legal department. It's going to be the legal department that has the determination on whether this national policy problem will be aired or not. And so I would like to get Robert Kennedy Jr., get him cornered. We could get a lot of loving good people and say, we love you, Mr. President, because he probably can become president. And I would love him and the legal departments of the networks to say, okay, we're gonna talk about this in the presidential debates, because it's still these rampant, huge numbers, mass murders. I mean, this is like a Hitlerism. And yet all we're hearing about is the biggest atrocity we have is a corrupted election. And I'll tell you that this is my opinion. I don't have backup from other authorities like I have about this topic that we're airing tonight. But my opinion about the elections is that as long as we have top-down procedural law and the strength given to the Department of Justice to harm our country by policy, then it doesn't even matter who's in office, really. The president is always a puppet being told by his DOJ and his cabinet advisors has DOJ members on it. And the DOJ doesn't only tell the president what to do. The DOJ also writes his speeches. Now, maybe when Trump is there, that's not going to happen anymore, because Trump has already promised.
Trump or Robert Kennedy, either one. I think would be
because they're not policies. I mean, and Trump isn't, but I'm just saying that, when you talk about top procedural laws, I really do believe that's exactly what's going on. And I was listening to you and Robin last night, and I was like, man, I'm kind of lost with all this. But I really thought about it, Dave. I've been looking it up. I've been looking, and you are right about what's really going on, Sylvia. So thank you for coming on. Our show is completed. It's over.
Is there any way that people who would like to can contact you?
Yes, please share how they can get a hold of you.
I'd like to tell them more of the details. Usually my very first accounting given is the best one. So it's kind of weird how that happens, but
do you have an email that you want to share with everybody?
I guess that would be a good way. I mean, they could always text me, too. That way I'll be sure to get their calls when they need to type the topic.
You want me to give talk to me and I can share your number with them?
Sure, I'm very open. I mean, I'm not afraid of anybody. I'm afraid of top-down procedural law. But not people themselves.
Okay, so what I'll do is if anybody wants to contact you, I will share your phone number with them if that's all right with you.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Justice
requires transparency and accountability, and giving up is not an option.
So remember, all our shows are video. They're archived. Not video, but they're archived. They are at The Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio. It's called Faces Radio, everybody. You could list all the stories there you want. Share them.
Absolutely.
If no one believes that this is going on, we've got proof. And so we're not sure who we're having on our show next week, but if you want to come on, talk to me at Faceus Radio, FACEUS Radio at hotmail.com. I'll be glad to respond to you. You can also find me up on Facebook, Families Against Court Embezzlement, Unethical Standards, Faceus. You can find us on Twitter. What else we got to say? I guess that's it, folks.
Thank you. Appreciate you and value
you. Thank
you,
Marcy and Hillary Hoke, and we will be talking to everybody next week. And hopefully, be able to get some John Gentry on here. I got to talk to him still. So, everybody, keep in touch with us, and we'll give you the most recent news going around in the country. And good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
God bless us, everyone.
God bless us, everyone. Yeah. Let's go ahead
Thank you so much for the
NASCAR commercial. Good night, Sylvia. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit StopGuardianAbuse.org.